have the things where people switch roles, where they have daughters, what, do you have anywhere where they have interaction goals? I mean, so like, a realistic example, like, I run into Michael on the campus, I come up with one good idea every month, he comes up with one every day, so I'm glad to see him every day, but he's only glad to see me once a month. So he starts avoiding me after he's gotten the one idea I come up with.
I don't know if I want to predict what your interactions would be, but the smart event that we're spending the most time on right now is a conversation event.
Okay.
All right. And there are a few interesting characteristics of that. If you imagine a game where people are standing around talking, you want them to look like they're talking, but you don't know what they're talking about. Right? So it's not so much about the natural language communication, but the interactions, the time course of their interaction, and there are different interaction types. So it might be that when two agents get together, they have a conversation type that gets chosen randomly, and one of them might be the casual greeting, and the other might be the deep conversation. And there's a priority, so that either by virtue of your relationship. So if the one who wants the casual greeting is your department chair, you may acquiesce to the department chair's choice. Or if you capture the person who is of lower social stature of your own, then you get a long conversation because you've got priority. So there's some interaction that selects the kind of conversation that follows. And okay, you're with me? No?
Right. What I was suggesting that's a little bit different is that is as if the interaction is a goal itself, and once it's satisfied, the likelihood of that the next interaction being the same is different because the satisfaction levels for each of the agents is different.
Right. There is some hysteresis and history. So what you don't want is two people having a long conversation, wandering around, coming back, having another long conversation,
right.
Wandering, right? And in fact, it happens even with just greeting rituals. You know, the first time we see each other, we might spend a few interaction gestures. The second time, if it's a few seconds away, we might just nod our heads. And after that, we might just ignore each other until one of us leaves the room in space or 5 minutes elapse. There's a whole social vocabulary there that is part of this, right? And we can just intuit so much of that, and the rest is hand waving. Okay. I mean, if you have an extrovert, maybe every time you see that extrovert, it's a long conversation. The introvert sees you and runs away. You know, all those factors play, and I think that we're not proposing that we understand a fully integrated architecture, but that we understand how pieces can fit together with some random variables, okay, to make something plausible. The conversation event has different base types. We're looking at a buyer-seller right now, which is kind of a negotiation, and kind of a question answering, you know, which way to the bank? That way, thank you. It was like three interactions. But imagine you don't hear the speech or it's a foreign language and you don't know what's being said. You know, those two agents should look like they had an appropriate conversation and imparted ways. And the outcomes will have emotional results as well. We're looking at negotiations that succeed and fail. We're looking at dialogues that end amicably and ones that end in fistfights. Right? And these are not based on any reasoning. They're just, you know, they're literally behavior trees that execute with just very few random variables that will create enough variability to look realistic. And then, so the idea is you as the observer are watching the space. People are talking, people are buying things over there. Oh, those guys are getting into a fight. Why? Well, maybe it's a distraction and they, you know, it's really a fake fight. What's going to happen is then somebody's going to do something bad. You realize where, you know, if there's Army and Marines, they may be involved in interest in here. That's, you know, they have ulterior motives in simulations, not just graphics. I'm sure. Yeah.
Can we say that the bottom line is still this great event simulation with a lot of probabilities and distributions and choices?
It is a simulation, there is no doubt. And it's not a continuous system simulation in that I'm not doing any physics. So yes, it's a discrete simulation, but the problem is that those simulations depend on variables that we know are probably bound to human behaviors, and finding values for those variables and the interaction processes that go on between people and things is actually the hard part. Absolutely right. It's a discrete simulation. It's not so much queuing theory kind of things, but there is a simulation engine underneath it.
Yes.
When you have your level of detail, how do you prove that the highly detailed one is simulated by the less detailed one? You know, everywhere else. Like where I'm looking at right now, we're highly detailed, but I don't want to have a million people passing messages back and forth, so I have this greater. How do you prove that the larger scale one scales well?
So there's a couple of points in there. So if I'm answering the wrong one, correct me. Okay. So the level of simulation detail assumes there are two directions. One with the alibi generation, which is these guys are wandering around, but if I look deeper, they have to come up with a purpose. Their purposes are set in a preloading of the database with the statistics of what people do in that city. Okay, so actually, people have residences and places they work, and there are buildings that are restaurants and so forth. But when we just drop all those people in, they just start essentially wandering around until we look at them. The other part of your question is on the simulation level of detail. If I get closer and closer, I should see more and more detail.
But so it should be consistent.
It should be consistent, and switching between those levels is not easy to do. I mean, most of this level switching now is done graphically. So as you zoom in and look at something, you get better bodies. You see hands and fingers, and there's not a lot of work on how you smoothly transition, you know, in and out at a large dynamic range of scales. And you don't want to simulate these million inhabitants down to the finger level all the time. Only if you're going to see it with enough detail do you want to do it. So I actually have to answer that that's work in progress, but we're using this sort of measure of how much a simulation costs to know when to switch. And you switch just in time so that if you look closer, you know, it looks like you've been doing it the whole time. It's pretty non trivial. The problem actually in discrete simulation in our lab was first looked at by one of my students named Paul Fishwick, who's now at University of Florida in Gainesville. And there are two directions you go when you switch level of detail. You can instantiate or specialize, or you can abstract. Okay. So if you go down, you need to instantiate detail. And if you abstract, you can start to throw it away selectively. And it's almost always easier to abstract than it is to instantiate, because you have to maintain the previous state. You have to be cognizant of the state you're in. You just can't throw things away. But you can do it. And he showed that, you know, with some, at least the example he worked on was an elevator simulation. You know, you can do it physically, you can do it by floors, or you can do it by just what do you see when you stand in front of the doors. And if you just stand in front of the doors, you actually don't need anything except you need to know that the door's open and closed, right? So it's ideas that we can use, but it's work in progress. Thanks.
And what kind of applications have you been doing? I mean, I can see, for instance, evacuation would be a very nice application.
All right, so most of the people who do crowd simulation for a reason do it for evacuation planning purposes. And that's where, indeed, we started with ours. But lately, we've been interested in what I like to say are the 99.9% of the time where people aren't evacuating. Okay, so what's going on normally? And unfortunately, normal behaviors or everyday behaviors are totally boring. Okay, and people don't typically study them. Right? The in-between is like a subway where, you know, people are entering trains or exiting trains, transportation centers. But the projects that have driven us, if I might just go back to this, driven us in the sense that sponsors have wanted to put money on it, is for eventually for training purposes. You want to train individuals to behave appropriately and respond appropriately in environments that they're probably not familiar with. So you do that virtually. Well, you could do it with real people, but real people as trainers are very expensive. So the idea is you build, instead of actors who can make really good Iraqi villages, for example, but they have to be fed, they're tired, they're expensive, and they're just not that many of them. The idea is to build out a virtual world that you can control. And then you can train for your behaviors. And that's clearly the basis for the Robotics Collaborative Technology Alliance. Actually, the interest there is getting robots as teammates, but if you want to do anything interesting, you have to interact with the populace.
So a lot of your funding comes from the military, currently.
Yes, and Lockheed.
I think the military has a special interest in funding something like that.
Yes.
Can you give any more detail without getting into non-disclosure?
I have no secrets. We don't do anything classified. There's no non-disclosure agreements. But, I mean, it's really for training, okay? Just because the government has funded and the military has funded these, we've leveraged it to do all the crowd simulation and graphics work. And most of the time, the products of this work are reports, algorithms, papers, systems, ideas, and those get tossed back to the sponsors. In the case of the Robotics Technology Alliance, it's General Dynamics. In the case of Lockheed Martin last year, the primed agents, smart event primed agents, the Heisenberg work, and some other work that's not yet been published on VR. I don't even want to say what it is yet until we publish it. But they're basically publications, and that's what's expected of us. And from that derives PhD students, and they go out and whatever. Then they go in the game industry and the entertainment industry. So if you want to look at it in a funny way, the U.S. Army is supporting the entertainment industry.
Well, they have a strong collaboration with USC.
Yeah, and ICT.
So guys,
I should get so much money as that. This is more indirect.
Okay.
Thank you so much for your attention.
Thank you very much.